Welcome to the Swiss Info Podcast, a roundup of the biggest stories from this week in Switzerland, plus the business and cultural highlights.
Thank you for downloading this podcast for January the 4th. I'm Julia Slater, and on behalf of all my colleagues, I'd like to wish you a Happy New Year and hope you'll keep listening to our podcasts and visiting the Swiss Info site throughout 2008.
I shall try to avoid certain mistakes and do other things better.
That's a resolution that most of us might make every year. Stay listening to find out who's making it here. It's all change in Switzerland at New Year. It may be a holiday for most of us, and we'll come back to that, but January the 1st is an important day in the political calendar. The new president takes over, and any ministerial changes come into force. Swiss ministers are elected by Parliament once every 4 years, and the seats are divided among the four largest parties. In a surprise move last December, the controversial Justice Minister, Christoph Blocher of the People's Party, was voted out of office in favour of a more moderate member of his party, Evelyn Widmer-Schlumpf. In his last news conference as minister on December the 28th, he was unrepentant about his record in office, where he said he'd helped reduce government spending.
In asylum matters alone, we have been able to bring about reductions of around 180 million francs, partly thanks to our fight against abuse.
January the 1st is also a date when new legislation comes into force, and this year is no exception. It includes some of Blocher's projects, like tougher laws on asylum and foreigners. People receiving disability benefit will find it harder to claim. But one group who will be happy with the new rules are married couples, who stand to benefit from changes to the tax system. Up until now, it's been financially advantageous for couples to live together without being married, but this will no longer be the case. The last cabinet elections caused quite a stir, but on the whole, ministers often seem a little bit remote and dull to many people. A new venture is set to change all that. They now all have their profiles on the social networking website Facebook, thanks to an economics student from Neuchâtel. Although the site is unofficial, its creator, Bertil Zutter, hopes it will raise interest in politics. And now back to our main story. Under Switzerland's unique government system, the seven cabinet ministers take it in turns to be president for a year, starting on January the 1st. Here's Morven McLean with details of how Switzerland's new president, Interior Minister Pascal Couchepin, is approaching his year in office.
Pascal Couchepin has been a minister since 1998, and this is the second time he's been Swiss president, so he brings a certain experience to the job. One of the president's tasks is to chair the cabinet meetings, and as he told Swiss Info, he's learnt some lessons from the first time round.
Tâcherai d'éviter des erreurs et d'améliorer.
I shall try to avoid certain mistakes and do other things better. As far as managing cabinet affairs is concerned, of course, the conduct of its meetings needs to be well ordered and strict, but perhaps a slightly lighter touch is required.
Mr. Couchepin named his priorities as tackling government reform, consolidating state finances, and developing relations with the European Union. He was keen to stress the importance of the way Switzerland presents itself in a changing world. Gone are the times when a country could just wait for things to happen. It's time to be proactive. Of course, he's proud of the country, but this is what he said when asked what kind of image he wanted to put across.
Je pense que l'image que j'aimerais véhiculer c'est une image réaliste, c'est-à-dire ni trop bonne ni trop mauvaise, parce que pas non plus sain qu'on ait une vision trop.
A realistic image, in other words, one that is neither too good nor too bad. This vision is one of a country that has succeeded thanks to unusual circumstances, thanks to the wisdom of its people, and thanks also, I believe, to the wisdom of its political decisions. And thanks as well to its ability to promote economic activities based on science and knowledge.
As for the events he was looking forward to, he included two major sporting occasions, the Euro 08 football tournament, which Switzerland is co-hosting with Austria, and the Olympic Games in Beijing, whose main stadium, incidentally, has been designed by Swiss architects.
Mr. Couchepin may well have been too busy to get out on the ski slopes over the holiday period, but thousands of other people took advantage of ideal winter sports conditions to invade Switzerland's alpine resorts. Tourism operators were rubbing their hands in glee as hotels filled up and ski lifts sold a record number of passes. The downside, of course, was queues on the roads to the resorts and at the lifts, and a number of accidents. The worst occurred on January the 3rd, when a German tourist was killed and three other people were injured in the Jungfrau region above Grindelwald when a chairlift plummeted to the ground. The Air Rescue Service reported many more call-outs than in normal years, most of them involving cases of skiers or snowboarders colliding with each other. The Swiss Alps attract their share of the rich and famous every winter. This year, rumour was rife that a particularly important guest was expected. No less a person than Russian President Vladimir Putin, who was supposed to be visiting wealthy compatriots in the Engadine. But did he actually turn up? No one knows. And now for a roundup of some other events that marked the turn of the year. Mr. Putin might have felt at home if he'd been in Geneva on January the 1st. He could have joined the city's hardy swimmers in their annual New Year plunge in the lake. It's true that they didn't have to cut a hole in the ice as Russians do, but the water was definitely not warm. The period between New Year's Eve and January the 2nd is the occasion of various traditional customs, particularly in German-speaking Switzerland. In the town of Halwil, for example, they threshed in the new year using the heavy flails that were once used to beat corn. Then on January the 2nd, the young men of the village dressed up as masked figures symbolising either winter and death or spring and life and ran round making mischief and greeting people for the new year. Someone who experienced some very intense cold this winter was Swiss extreme sportswoman Evelina Binzak. On December the 28th, she reached the South Pole after an epic journey from Switzerland by bike and on foot. The adventure, to raise awareness of problems of the environment and poverty, had taken her 454 days. And now, where we usually go out and about, this week we stayed at home and welcomed to our studio someone who's been out and about on her own behalf. Connie Potter of the Chamber of Commerce in Bern, Indiana, was making her first ever visit to Bern, Switzerland. I began by asking her how she found the original Bern.
I was just really impressed with the quaint nature of the town, with the streets and the architecture right downtown. And of course we went immediately to the clock tower because that's what Bern is known for.
And I think you've got a clock tower in Bern, Indiana.
We are planning to build one. We have a proposed clock tower at this point. We would like to build a clock tower in our community that resembles the clock tower here in Bern, Switzerland. And private funds are being raised for that. We are looking forward to building a beautiful tower with a plaza surrounding it that will have fountains and a bear statue and a settler statue. And we hope that people from Bern, Switzerland will come to see our beautiful clock tower also.
Can you tell me something about the background to Bern, Indiana? Who founded it? Why it's called Bern?
There are all kinds of stories about why it's called Bern, but I think basically because it was founded by people who came from this community. There's a little plaque in front of our post office that says it was founded in 1852 by 70 devout Mennonite immigrants that came from the Emmental region of Switzerland. And there were different names that were used for it at one time or another early on. And then I think it had something to do finally when the railroad came through. You know, you have to finally decide on an official name. And I think that they decided to go with Bern at that point.
Is there a very large Swiss community, or does it feel Swiss in Bern, Indiana?
I think it feels Swiss, yes. And we definitely have Swiss architecture in our buildings. If you are downtown, you will notice a lot of the buildings have a Swiss influence. I think people who come from Swiss might take a look at it and say, that's not authentic Swiss. And no, it's probably not exactly authentic, but it definitely has a Swiss influence in it.
And what about the people of Bern? Is it noticeable that they've got Swiss ancestry? I mean, do they keep alive Swiss traditions, things like that?
We have a festival in the summer called Swiss Days, and we do try to have several activities that portray a Swiss influence. But there again, I think sometimes, you know, we get maybe just a little bit of a overlap. Sometimes we're not always real pure in our Swiss. There might be a little bit of Austrian and Bavarian influence, you know, as far as costumes and music and so forth are concerned. But as you go down from one generation to another, of course, I think you lose a little bit of that pure influence. But we do try to maintain the fact that we are a Swiss community. I think there is a lot of pride in that. Our motto for our Bern Chamber of Commerce is that we are promoting Bern as a distinctive world-class Swiss community. And oftentimes you will also hear people refer to Bern as a friendly Swiss community. And so I think that Swiss influence is something that we definitely try to build upon because it makes us unique from other small-town communities in the Midwest.
So what is distinctively Swiss?
That it has to do with a certain kind of pride, a good work ethic, knowing what our roots are. I think in order for people to be able to look optimistically to the future, they have to know who are we, who have we been. We are definitely a Mennonite community there in Bern, Indiana. I think that the religious heritage is important to them. I think work ethic, education, family are all things that are important to them.
That was Connie Potter, visiting from Bern, Indiana. And she ends the Swiss Info podcast for January the 4th. We hope you've enjoyed listening and that you'll take a look at the Swiss Info website, www.swissinfo.ch, where you can find out much more about what's going on here in Switzerland. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Julia Slater.